Hello and welcome to Business Daily from the BBC. I'm Justin Rowlatt. During the Trump administration, tackling climate change wasn't even on the radar. For President Biden, it's right near the top of his agenda. He'll be hosting a conference of 40 major economies this week in an effort to raise global ambition on the issue.
The U.S. has been gone for a while and we're back, and we mean to be back in a big and constructive an important way.
But how can the world's biggest economy lead the way on climate change when other countries are rolling back protections? We hear from the heart of the Brazilian Amazon, where the environmental police say they are losing the war against the loggers.
In places where we didn't have incidents in the past, now loggers, prospectors, squatters are rioting. It has become guerrilla warfare.
That's all here on Business Daily from the BBC. Tackling climate change is set to be one of President Biden's defining policies.
In my view, we've already waited too long to deal with this climate crisis. We can't wait any longer. We see it with our own eyes, we feel it, we know it in our bones.
The tone could hardly be more different from his predecessor, who pulled the world's biggest economy out of a landmark climate deal.
The United States will withdraw from the Paris Climate Accord.
President Biden announced his intention to rejoin the 2015 Paris Agreement on his first day in office, as well as his plan to host what he called a climate ambition conference to coincide with Earth Day tomorrow.
Irie days, come on play, let the angels fly, let the devils die. Got to do what you can with the time ahead. Ali Bumaye.
Alongside performances on the virtual sidelines by the likes of Yo-Yo Ma and Ziggy Marley, who you can hear now, we are expecting the US to announce dramatic new commitments on cutting carbon. President Biden is expected to say the US will cut greenhouse gas emissions by 50% by 2030 and go net zero by 2050. Just for a reminder, net zero means cutting emissions as much as possible and capturing those that can't be prevented by planting trees or through engineering solutions. That would be an impressive statement of intent, but can the US really demand other nations raise their carbon-cutting game when it spent the Trump years out of the game completely? Let's ask a man who would know.
My name is Todd Stern. I was the special envoy for climate change for President Obama from the beginning of his administration all the way through all the negotiations that led up to and included the Paris Agreement.
Todd says this is shaping up to be a watershed year for climate.
I think you have to understand what is at stake this year. So this is the first year since Paris where countries are supposed to step up and increase the targets that they had put forward for 2030, or if they had only put forward 25 targets, to put forward their first 2030 targets, because we're not on a good enough track yet. You have Biden, the United States, back for the first time after the four dark years of the Trump administration. I think that President Biden and his team are super committed on this issue. I think that this is an important year. It's good to kickstart the effort to push for countries to push each other up higher now in April rather than kind of waiting for a meeting in a couple of months later.
So, Todd, is that the idea? Is that the idea to set that sort of bar for ambition early on to try and get the countries of the world to rally around?
Yeah, I expect that most countries will not come to this summit announcing new targets, but I think one big one will, and that's the United States.
But let me ask you a question, because Sue, the producer, and I have been phoning around, spokespeople, activists, politicians in the developing world. Lots of them say, listen, it's all very well, Biden and his climate envoy, Kerry, talking about ambition, but America has been a very inconstant partner on the climate issue over the years, hasn't it? I mean, you've been in the room, you've been at lots of these negotiations. It's true, isn't it? America, you know, announces these big ambitions, then the next president, you know, doesn't deliver them.
Listen, that there is no question that that's a real problem. There's no question that that kind of awareness is in people's mind. But I'll tell you something else that is also in people's mind. They want the United States to be back. They want the United States to be exercising leadership. What I have said on many occasions is that the United States needs to have some humility. They need to understand that, you know, although we helped, you know, we were very central in the creation of the Paris Agreement all the way through. And then, you know, Donald Trump walks away. So that is reality, and we can't walk away from it. We have to have some humility. But if we had so much humility that we were going to sit politely in the corner and think, well, we better not talk because, you know, people are mad at us, people would be upset with that. They expect the United States to lead.
More from veteran climate negotiator Todd Stern later in the program. But first, many developing countries complain that the developed world hasn't honoured a commitment to provide finance to help with the transition to a low-carbon economy. At the UN climate conference in Copenhagen back in 2009, it was agreed $100 billion a year would be made available. But what do you do with a country like Brazil? As the world was battling the coronavirus pandemic, Brazil's environment minister saw an opportunity to roll back environmental protections, as this recording of a cabinet meeting reveals.
We have a chance at this moment when the media's attention is almost exclusively on COVID and not on the Amazon. While things are quiet, let's move quickly and change all the rules.
He later said he actually meant simplify the rules, but it comes as his government's record in the Amazon is being heavily criticised, as I discovered while making a documentary for BBC World TV. We were given footage of environmental police officers being attacked by loggers, and spoke to a senior environmental police officer who said government policy under current President Jair Bolsonaro is making his job increasingly difficult.
Last year, an officer was trying to seize a vehicle that was taking timber from indigenous land. And he got hit with a bottle while the police that was meant to protect him just watched. The police are loyal to the president. In the past, the police would give us security during the operations. It has become guerrilla warfare.
Rates of deforestation are up 34% on last year, according to one Brazilian NGO. Yet now the Brazilian government is asking for $1 billion a year to sort the problem out.
I think that we have seen a big change in how environmental issues and deforestation are addressed in Brazil since Bolsonaro took office.
That's Lisa Vicidi. She's director of the Energy and Climate Change Program at the Inter-American Dialogue think tank based in Washington.
His sort of attitude about climate change, his skepticism, has been a big change from previous administrations in Brazil. There was never such so much rhetoric around the need to develop the Amazon and the fact that protecting the forest was seen as an impediment to economic development in that region. It costs a lot of money to enforce rules. You have to have people from the Environmental Regulatory Agency out in the field, actually going out to see where deforestation is occurring and try to put a stop to it. And a big part of the problem has been that there's been less resources and less support. And so that's why, even though deforestation has always occurred, it's gone up a lot because there isn't enough enforcement, even compared to what we saw before.
So one of the things that is going to be discussed at this climate conference that President Biden's hosting is a proposal by the Brazilian government that they get $10 billion a year to help them transition to a low-carbon economy, $1 billion of which, according to the environment minister, will go towards tackling deforestation. You've got to look at the deforestation figures in Brazil and you wonder whether there's an element of blackmail here. Loggers and farmers have let rip in the Amazon, huge levels of deforestation, and then the Brazilian government goes, well, if you want us to sort it out, you're going to have to give us $1 billion a year.
Well, I think the problem is that there's sort of skepticism on both sides, on the side of the U.S. and on the side of Brazil. So, you know, the U.S. wants proof that Brazil is really going to improve its actions toward protecting the Amazon. And Brazil wants proof that international actors are really going to support Brazil's efforts in the way Brazil's government wants to move forward, rather than sort of trying to indirectly take control of the conservation process.
I mean, that problem of distrust between developing nations and the US is a big problem, not just in Brazil, but in many, many developing countries who say, look, you're not a very trustworthy partner. You know, you don't stick to the agreements that you sign up. You know, one president is really enthusiastic about cutting carbon. The next president drops the thing. They're not a great partner to do long-term deals with, are they, the Americans?
The response that I'm seeing from a lot of Latin American and Caribbean countries is, I think, maybe a little more short-term and opportunistic. And I mean that in a very positive sense. They're saying, we've got at least 4 years with an administration that is serious about climate change, and we should take advantage of this.
Well, in a way, that's quite an optimistic interpretation, isn't it? I mean, if you know, Biden is talking seriously about cutting carbon in America, he's also talking about ponying up, isn't he? He's talking about delivering in terms of huge amounts of resources.
Yes. I mean, I think a lot could be achieved in 4 years. We're already seeing the effects of climate change on these countries in terms of, you know, more severe hurricanes, droughts. In Central America, this is one of the drivers of migration to the United States. These countries are already facing the effects of climate change. And I think in the immediate term, there's a lot that the U.S. can do to help them. And I think it's a great opportunity.
That was Lisa Vicidi, an expert on climate policy in Latin America.
Sorry to keep you waiting. I've been running around.
Last week, on a trip to Asia, the current U.S. climate envoy, John Kerry, agreed to work to boost international cooperation to achieve carbon neutrality by 2050.
We all face this challenge. But Europe has set a goal of 55% reduction. Many other countries, Japan is considered a higher level than it's at now by a significant amount. So, and we're evaluating right now what we ourselves can do with a view to trying to raise the ambition.
But one country that has been raising its climate game is China. It's the world's biggest producer of solar panels, wind turbines, batteries, and electric vehicles, all of which explains why Isabel Hilton, the founder of the China Dialogue website, which reports on China and the environment, says it is America that's playing catch-up when it comes to tackling climate change.
They're out investing them on a number of fronts, and that's partly because the Chinese 10 years ago at least saw the opportunity side of climate change, and they invested in being the global supplier of those technologies. That's the bet they made. And by that investment, it reduced the price of those technologies for everybody. So it's now extremely affordable to develop a country using renewables, which it wasn't before. And they've done that consistently. Now, where they haven't been as good as we'd all like them to be is in bending their own curve, reducing their own carbon footprint. So there's certainly more to do. But that ambition won't come unless we also recognise how much China has already done.
But this does make it very difficult for Biden and Kerry, doesn't it? Because they've got a credibility issue. And you saw it again when they Kerry visited India a couple of weeks back. And afterwards, the Indian said, listen, we're not going to be pushed around by any developed nation. You've got more responsibility for climate change than we have. You're the historic emitters. And all of that quite familiar rhetoric that we used to hear a decade ago in talks. I mean, is that going to be a real problem, do you think, not just for the Biden climate summit, but also for the big summit that's scheduled for Glasgow in November this year?
I do think that a certain amount of sensitivity to the way others see us is useful in diplomacy, and certainly in complicated diplomacy like climate diplomacy. And developing countries have a legitimate complaint that funding was promised to them to help them adapt and mitigate, avoid locking themselves into a high-emitting development pathway. And that money has never been completely delivered. In fact, it's fallen quite radically short. So I think that on the diplomatic front, it's really quite useful not to point fingers, but to look for ways where we can construct a race to the top. So if the United States were able to put in a really ambitious climate plan into action, it might well stimulate China to try to compete in a virtuous cycle rather than in this rather negative finger-pointing trope that we seem to fall into.
That was Isabel Hilton of China Dialogue. And that advice, that the best way to lead is by example, is being echoed by nations around the world. And it explains why on Tuesday, the UK announced it aims to cut emissions by 78% by 2035, the most aggressive target of any industrial economy. And also why President Biden is expected to announce those eye-catching ambitions, says Todd Stern.
Look, I think that you're going to see very, very significant investment by the United States there. But the United States has gone very far already. Look, I take my hat off to China with respect to all the clean. The problem is that at the same time that they're doing all the clean, they're doing all the dirty. And there is something in the neighborhood of 150 or 200 gigawatts of new coal that are being planned by China. If you want to give a sense of how large that is, the entire United States electricity system is about 1,100. And look, I am sympathetic to China's challenges. They've got huge challenges, and I think they've done, they're the leading country in the world on renewables. So, like, hats off to them, but they really have to transition, phase out coal over the course of the next 20 years.
Right, so the conference opens Thursday morning, doesn't it? This virtual conference being hosted by US President Joe Biden. What would your advice to him be? As a man who's been in the room in lots of these negotiations in the past, you know how difficult it is to get all these fractious different countries with their different hopes and ambitions together agreeing something. What tone should he be setting? What should he be saying to the 40 countries who will hopefully be attending this summit?
I think, first of all, it would be good somewhere in there to have some recognition of that the U.S. has been gone for a while and we're back and we mean to be back in a big and constructive and important way. I think also that this is a problem that requires all of our attention. Everybody, if you look at the science and you look at the impacts of in the world as we've seen them over the 5 years from Paris, if anything, what that tells us is that we have to do even more than we thought. You know, we can't go for my target was 10, now I'm going to do 10 and a half. No, we've got to be stronger than that. And if Paris is going to look like it's the place where we can, you know, where it can be the central locus for climate action, we've got to deliver.
Veteran U.S. climate negotiator Todd Stern ending this edition of Business Daily. And as always, the programme will be back again tomorrow, so do tune in.
From the BBC World Service.
He said he was hacker.
So many millions of dollars.
It's got to be North Korea.
How in the world did this happen?
The Lazarus Heist, Episode 1, is available now.